This is Bo Buller, producer of Contacts. In this episode of the Contacts Coaching Podcast, we revisit a 2023 episode with Greg Daniels II, the celebrated head basketball coach at Monterey High School, a three-time section champion, and most recently, the coach of the Division IV California State champion. What's unique in this episode, whether listening for the first time or on a subsequent listen, is many of the areas Coach emphasized in the spring of 2023 played a role in their state title run in 2024. He stresses the significance of establishing a unified vision within the team, the value of good assistant coaches, and the necessity of building strong relationships with players. Coach Daniels discusses overcoming challenges, learning from losses, and the importance of flexible strategies in player development. We hope you enjoy the episode and look forward to a new slate starting next week. In the meantime, here's Greg and Justin.
This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? Let me tell you. It's a delicious, sugar-free, electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With a variety of delicious flavors, you are guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt, while my favorite is grapefruit. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice or games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another product, and I am replenishing our supply on a weekly basis. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first order, Element is giving us a 150% commission. That means if you spend $100, we get $150 to keep this podcast running. The best deal you can get is to buy an insider bundle. You buy three boxes, you get one free. And if you click our affiliate link, drinkelement.com/JustinClimo, we will get a commission and you will get a free sample pack with every purchase. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you will be instantly refunded. Let's talk about sleep for a minute. I've had a terrible time getting productive rest and sleep for the last few years. And since poor sleep can lead to all sorts of health problems, I'm constantly on the hunt for a better night's sleep. Recently, I came across a new product called Beam Dream, which has delivered the best sleep I've had in a long time. The first time I tried it, I fell asleep on the couch within a half hour and didn't wake up until the next day. Since starting my new routine with Beam, my sleep performance has improved significantly according to both my Oura Ring and Whoop Band. Yes, I use both at once because why not have more data? If you are interested in upgrading your sleep, I invite you to try Beam Dream. Today, my listeners get a special discount on Beam's Dream Powder, their best-selling healthy hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. Now available in delicious seasonal flavors like cinnamon cacao, sea salt caramel, and white chocolate peppermint. Better sleep has never tasted better. A recent clinical study revealed that 93% of users wake up feeling more refreshed, and 93% reported that Dream helped them get a more restful night's sleep. If you're looking for a way to get some rest and you have trouble sleeping, I highly recommend this product. If you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, take advantage of their biggest sale of the year and get up to 50% off for a limited time. When you go to shopbeam.com/contacts, discount auto applied at checkout, no code is necessary. That's shopbeam.com/contacts for up to 50% off. If you're a longtime listener, you might know that I've been drinking AG1 for a couple of years. If you're not a longtime listener, then know that I drink AG1 on a daily basis. When I first started drinking it daily, I could feel a real difference in my daily health. I had more energy, I felt more relaxed, I could focus better. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutritional supplement that supports your body's universal needs, like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter and better way to elevate your baseline health. I recommend AG1 to all of my family and friends because it has worked so well for me. So much so that my two eldest children have become regular users of the product. My daughter, who has been studying abroad, recently asked us to bring her more product when we went to visit her at Thanksgiving. My other daughter, who's a freshman in college, regularly contacts us to make sure we send her more product. AG1 has been transformational as it has replaced all of the needless ramekins of vitamins and minerals that I used to take. If you really want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and five free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/contacts. That's drinkag1.com/contacts to order your own supply and start on your journey to better health. Welcome to the Contacts Coaching Podcast, dedicated to bringing you practical ideas from coaches, sharing what they have learned throughout their career. The show is designed to serve as a digital database of mentorship from a wide network of coaches whose innovative, reflective, and diverse knowledge may offer ideas to enhance your experience. In addition to sport-specific expertise, each episode also dives into the ways in which culture, strategy, and tactics can cross from one discipline to another. I'm your host, Justin Klein. Welcome back to the Contacts Coaching Podcast. We're joined this evening by Greg Daniels, the second head basketball coach, Monterey High School, three-time section champion in the last 6 years, leader of a dynasty, Toreador Nation. Greg, thanks for being here tonight.
Thank you. Thank you, Justin. Thank you for having me.
All right, let's dive in here, Coach. Let's give the audience a little grounding as to who we're talking with today. If you could take us through your background as a coach, how'd you get into this profession, this world, this act of service that we do? What was the journey like in getting your first job and any subsequent jobs? And the 20 years you've been there at your alma mater.
I started coaching at the Boys and Girls Club, just volunteering, helping the middle school kids. And I was having fun with it. And I was working at the Mercedes dealership, and there was the landscaping guy. He knew I went to Monterey High. He knew I played sports. He was like, hey, they got openings over there. You should apply. And I just giggled, thought no big deal. But I ended up applying. And I
this is, wait, this is fresh out of high school, Greg? Or this is like this, after
low well, it was school? After college.
So you went from high school at Monterey High.
And then I went from high school to a junior college. I played football 2 years, and then I got a football scholarship to Adams State. So I played linebacker in college. Then I came home and I didn't graduate from college when I first went. So I came home, I was working. And then, like I said, the landscaper guy told me Monterey was hiring. So I went over there and I applied and I became the JV coach. So I coached JV for 4 years. And man, when I became the varsity coach, it's really like a fluke, if you ask anybody. The varsity coach at the time missed practice and a couple other things happened. So the school decided they're just going to go in another direction. And they just, Mr. Bedell, Andy Bedell, Mr. Albert, Mr. Asaki, Coach Noble. They said, Mr. Albert, I remember like yesterday, looked me in my face. He's, are you ready? I think you're ready. And I just, what are you talking about? And then it hit me like, he's telling me I'm going to be the coach. So my first year I was interim coach and we made the playoffs. We did okay. And then they just brought me back the next year. And I just been there ever since then.
And this is year what now?
This is year 23.
Good Lord. Here's the irony, Coach. You just told us all that you went from Monterey High to junior college to four-year college to play football, yet you're coaching basketball. Talk about how that shift happened. And when the landscaping guy told you they were hiring, you were looking at basketball jobs and not football jobs.
Yeah, that is funny because I do love both sports. I played both in high school. And there was a time in high school I didn't know which one I wanted to play in college, but I was better in football. And so I went with that. I went that route. But I always loved basketball. I remember when I was in middle school, they took us to the state championship to watch Seaside High play. And Jason Kidd played that same day. I got to meet him in the hallway. He was the number one high school player in the nation. So things like that, I always remember. I always had those hoop dreams. So I always wanted to be a part of basketball. And I knew I wanted to be a coach. I didn't know if I wanted to coach football or basketball.
That 1992 Seaside team was special. I remember that like it was yesterday. But let's pivot back. So you get in, you're the JV coach. You do 4 years there. Whatever the circumstances were, you get asked, Mr. Albert, great term, are you ready? And usually the question I ask, and I'm going to ask it now, is when you had to slide over 18 inches, what did you realize right away, no matter how ready you thought you were, that you weren't ready for and that you needed to figure out?
I said I was ready, but I definitely wasn't ready. And I figured that out as the games went on. I wasn't ready for the coaching adjustments, the in-game adjustments, the preparation. There was the off-season planning. There were so many different things that I didn't know came with coaching. I just thought it's in play, but there were so many other aspects to the job. But I found out really fast that I had a long ways to go. And even to this day, I still got a long ways to go. I'm always still learning. I tell my coaches I'm a thief coach. Anytime we play anybody, if I watch your, and when I'm watching film, if I see something I like, we might be running it in a couple weeks. So if I think it fits us, I'll take it. So I'm always trying to learn. But at that time, I realized I didn't know. It hit me then that I didn't know nothing. I was just bare, green as a cucumber.
So if you could drill down on that a little bit, right? We get new guys in our room every single year when we're at Palma at the preseason coaches meeting, and there's, hell, sometimes 25% of the room that's new people. What would you offer, given that experience, realizing you didn't know what you didn't know, and now 23 years later, three section titles later, handful of league titles later, a program that generally has graduated kids, like what would you point out and say, hey, look, these are the three things. Like, I don't care what else you do, but 1, 2, 3, if you're not doing these, like you're going to fall on your face.
I think find something that you own, that you believe in, and stick with it. Something that you believe in, because everybody's going to tell you what you should be running, what you need to do. Hey, try this. But if you don't know it, if you don't own it, if you don't believe in it, it's not going to work. The next is you got to have some good supporting staff. My coaches, my assistant coaches, my team mom, the people that help us. Like we always say, if the boat's not, if we're not all rowing the same direction in the boat, we're not going anywhere. So I think just being on the same page as a program always helps. And then being honest with your kids and building relationships with your players. I think with my personal job that I have, I teach rapport building with my staff. And I don't want to say I'm a player's coach, but I think I relate to the kids really well. I think I understand them. I think I know when to push them and when to back off and how to communicate with them. But I also listen to the kids as well. And I make sure that their voices, that they know that they have a voice when they talk to me. And I think once the kids buy into what you're teaching and preaching, then that's half the battle. Because if they're playing hard for you, you could have one offensive set and just play man-to-man defense, and you have a chance because your kids believe in what you're teaching and they're going to play hard for you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm curious on that note, when you mentioned relationships and building relationships, can you talk a little bit about how to navigate that when you are not an on-campus coach? Meaning, I know for at least the last 3 years, maybe a little longer, correct me, you've been on campus finally, but for a long time before that, you weren't. Talk about the difference that makes and how you navigated those choppy waters when you weren't on campus.
Yeah, for a long time, I was an off-campus coach. So that was definitely a challenge because I would get phone calls about certain behaviors or certain incidents on campus. And I'm like, oh man, this happened. And I wasn't there to help maybe stop it before it happened or mediate the situation. So that was a challenge. And so I had to have other people on campus help me, campus monitors, also build relationship with the teachers, share my phone number, email, let them know that I'm also here to help the kids succeed academically, and I'm not just here to coach them and win games. And once the teachers also see that I care about the kids and I want them to succeed, then that helps the relationship with the teachers, because of course they're there for the academics. So I have teachers that help support me, the office staff, they're wonderful. It's Joyce, Julie, they're always communicating with me. Tom and Chelsea, over the years, they've always communicated with me on different things. And we've had several different ADs, but all of them have been wonderful too with their communication. So just having that support staff on campus that's also helping me. But it has made it easier in the transition these past few years with being on campus and being able to be on campus at break time or at lunch and socialize with all the kids. And just the kids knowing my face, that they might see my face on campus, definitely plays a part in how they act and their attendance and their academics as well.
So now that you have that experience, and to your point, how do I get involved in something before it goes sideways because I'm around, right? How am I a hub of communication? How can I be part of whatever behavior modification needs to happen across the board because I'm physically present? If you had a do-over back to when you were off campus, what are some things you would do differently? Because again, a lot of our colleagues aren't on campus and don't know how to navigate those waters. Can you share a few tidbits specifically about how to be present even when you're not on campus in order to help grow your program?
Yeah, try to participate in some of the activities that they have on campus when they have open house. And sometimes they'll have the day where all the different clubs and programs on campus, the different sports activities, where you can set up a table and you can talk about your sports and meet the parents and the teachers on campus. You have to participate in those activities, show your face on campus, because when I was a off-campus coach, I would come on campus and some of the new teachers, they didn't know who I was at all. So you definitely, the new teachers, you know, maybe check in with them. And also I would do progress reports. So that was also a way I communicated with teachers, just to let them know, hey, I'm the coach. You can talk to me. Here's my number. Also knowing your players and knowing which kids need more support, because there's some kids that are going to need more support than others. So once you know that and you figure that out, then you can get ahead of the game and go ahead and talk with those teachers or those different people on campus on how we can help support these particular students.
Yeah, for sure. What would you say has been the most challenging situation? And you don't need to get into details unless you feel like it, but over the course of, I don't know, let's say the last 10 years, right? So doing this for 23 years, a lot of it gets lost. But actually, hell, you know what? I lied. Let's pivot. First decade. Second decade, situation that caused you to rethink your approach and potentially change or shift it moving forward that is still with you today. So like this happened, I used to be here. And you know what? Because of that, I had to shift a little bit as an adult and as a leader to meet these kids where they were. So anything that pops into your mind, give me a first decade and a second decade.
Man, if I'm going to be honest and speak from the heart, that at the beginning, we had some phenomenal teams. We had some teams that was 22-4, 25-1. We won 20 games straight, and we lost the first playoff game. And it was so painful. And, of course, there's a lot of doubt in your mind. You drive home. You're by yourself. You're second-guessing. She should have did this. I should have did that. You watch the film. You go in public. People tell you, you got all this different criticism. And of course, as a coach, you got to have thick skin. You can't let that bother you. But as a competitor, just losing after having a phenomenal season and then seeing these young men in the locker room crying their hearts out, and then you realize that you were a part of the problem and not part of the solution. So as a coach, I had to evaluate myself and then reach out to other coaches. I would go to Coach Costa at CSUMB and Coach Vasher at Hartnell. I would go to their practices and sit with a pen and pad and watch their practices and see what are they doing that I'm not doing. Dan Powers, he's a real good friend of mine. I speak to him all the time about what he's doing in practice and what I'm not doing in practice. Because to me and Dan have opposite styles. And I love what he does. I love the discipline he teaches, the fundamentals he teaches, the way his kids run his stuff. I love it all. I wish I could put that in my players when we're so talented and bring that talent plus our skill level with the discipline that he teaches. So I just reach out to a lot of different coaches and try to pick their brains. I'm always picking someone's brain. But that's what I feel like my biggest changes were at the beginning. We didn't box out as well. I didn't practice it enough in practice. We didn't practice taking charges enough. We didn't practice setting screens enough. Half court, no dribble, run your plays, execute the play. I know you can beat the guy off the bounce, but what about when we play a team when you can't beat the guy off the bounce? What are we going to do? We're in trouble. So that's what that first decade taught me with those teams. I had phenomenal players. When I look at those team pictures, I'm like, those kids were supposed to win. They were supposed to win something. So I feel like I let those kids down. But the best part is those kids know I love them and I did my best at that time. And those kids still come around to this day and they celebrate with the new generation and the success that the new generation is
having. I think that's important to note, Coach, which is if you build the relationship and you pour into the kids and they know you love them, the outcome is just part of that journey. And as you're aware, when you get to the playoffs, like things got to go perfectly. And if they don't, like sometimes there's a sniper in the room. Stuff happens. And if you are only evaluating based on that last game, you're missing the fact that you won 90% of your games that year and the kids grew and they got that stuff to go with them. And that, hell, truth be told, adversity strengthens. So those losses probably helped you. They probably helped those players in life. What about the second decade, right? You learned all that in the first decade. What happened the second decade?
The second decade, I think I became more confident in what I was teaching and what I believed. And also my assistant coaches, we've been together 15 years. So like we're on the same page. In practice, it's like second nature. I caught COVID last year and I had to sit home for a couple of days and I text my coaches the practice plan. And I can imagine the practice ran perfectly fine without me being there. Of course, my yelling is probably a little different at times, but they know what to do. They know the system. They know the details. We've been together so long. We've celebrated great wins and we've had sad losses together. So like we're a family. So I think that part right there is the best thing we got going.
All right. So I'm a thief coach, to quote yourself, and threw a few names out there about conceptual guidance that you learned talking to other people, right? Can you point to a few things that you took directly from somebody? It doesn't need to be a play set either. I think a lot gets lost in the weeds on that. And I try to share with people, being a head coach, about 15% of what you do has anything to do with basketball. The other 85% is organizing, leadership training, travel, scheduling, managing egos. Like at the end of the day, what are some things that you were able to take from Coach Vasher, from Costa, from Danny, from anybody else in the area? Hell, they don't even have to be basketball coaches, Greg. What have you watched and been like, we're doing that because of the return on investment of time that it's going to provide for your athletes?
I really like DP. His kids, they talk. He calls a play, they all yell it. We used to never yell shot on our closeout. I stole that right away from DP, yelling shot. And we're doing it in practice where everybody yells shot on a closeout, even the guy standing on the sideline. So we're all on the same page. I think that has helped us tremendously. And DP, I remember when he won his first section title, we were talking and I wished him good luck. And then when he won, I was so happy for him. And I told him, man, I can only dream of winning one. And he told me, Greg, don't worry, hang in there. It'll come. And we won the next year. And it's just been like, he's a great friend of mine. I've had some rough moments and I've talked to him and it's helped me out because he was going through something similar.
All right. Let me circle back to the idea of football. And I am aware firsthand about the amount of time you spend watching football practice, no matter what the age group. But would you say, and one of my big soapboxes, Greg, you know this, we've talked about it, is the multi-sport athlete. I'm so happy at this point in my life that I'm a seasonal coach. It's like November 1, and when we're out and whatever, we'll do some skill and drill and some other things. My answer for my guys is go run track, go play lacrosse, go play football. That's going to help you get better. What would you say you have learned? You've known this, you played both. But you've had different iterations over your time there of guys that were, maybe they were basketball only, maybe they were doing something else that I wasn't aware of. And then guys that I've watched come from football 3 weeks into the season and show up and be like, all right, I'm here now. So talk about the value of that. And as a parent watching you coach your own children, not necessarily on the field or on the court, but into other activity. Talk about the value of that.
I think playing multiple sports is so beneficial for young athletes. I tell kids all the time, it helps your balance, it helps your motor control, helps your coordination, helps your hand-eye coordination. It helps so much. And sometimes you'll get a football guy coming from football to basketball. Of course, their conditioning is going to be a little off because it's different. It's less running out there on the football field and they get that break. But sometimes the toughness that they bring with being okay with bumping and setting the screen and the contact and just being okay with embracing the contact can help the hoopers. Cause I had that this year with our football team making the section title. They came late. So of course I got them late and they're out of shape, but their physicality definitely helped my team. They made us stronger. They made us tougher. And I think it's wonderful. We have the best baseball player in the school, and he's on our basketball team, and we're in NorCal's, and he's missing games, but he's locked in and all in on the basketball team, and he's one of the nine that's helping us win.
So I didn't think of this when I asked the question. Your football guys just played in a section championship. Your baseball team last year won a section championship, I believe.
They did.
What and how do you see that success translate and play a role in what you guys were just able to accomplish this year?
It plays a huge role in just believing, producing winners, just the morale of the school, the belief in different athletes. And like I said, this baseball kid, he's a winner. I think he's most likely going to be a D1 baseball player. So when you got a guy like that on your team with that competitive edge, I think it brings a competitive edge. As when you want to win, you're going to sacrifice differently. You're going to embrace your role differently. You don't have to be the star. Winning is the most important thing. So I think that helps a tremendous amount with the whole school being successful in different sports.
You mentioned that in the paper, and Bo actually sent it to us in a text where you said role players win championships, some variation of that, which I think anybody that's listening understands. What I'm curious about, and the segue that I appreciate you setting up, is you've now had three different teams win a section title. And people that aren't listening from out of state, in California, you have league play. And then there are 10 different sections in the state of California, from San Diego section to the Northern section, which is everything north of Sacramento, basically. And then you have ours, which is the Central Coast section, which has 155 schools in it, I think. But it's a little bit leveled up in regards to the competition level. And then now you're going into the NorCals, which is a precursor for the state championship if you can win the NorCals. Three different times, right? I think 17, 19, and now, what is this, 23. Talk a little bit about the different skill set needed from you as a leader in managing all of those teams based on personnel and role definition. And I think specifically this year, you've got football guys coming in, playing a substantial role on one of those teams. You basically had your core group that played 32 minutes were all basketball dudes. And then, you know, another, but talk a little bit about that idea of having to manage egos and having to carve out roles and the things that it takes to actually be successful.
Yeah, I really like that question, because the first couple teams I had, they definitely had more egos. But as you said, those guys were all hoopers. So those guys all had real hoop dreams, whether playing major D1, Division II, or just getting a scholarship. Most of those guys had dreams of at least playing at the next level. So with that comes a different little competitor edge where they want to have more success scoring the ball. So that was definitely a challenge, getting them on the same page, trying to help them understand that the team needs to be successful for you to get recognition. And sometimes kids don't realize that. I told them, you can average 30 points, but if you're under 500, nobody really cares about that. But if you're averaging 18, 19, and you're on a team that won 20 plus games, then, you know, that's noticeable. So I had to get that team on the same page. But the best part about those first groups is that they wanted to win more than anything as well. So even though they had egos, when it was crunch time, they shared the ball to win the game. It didn't matter. When I think about some of the wins they had in the playoffs, different guys stepped up at different times. Yes, we had Muhammad. He made some big time shots. But before that moment in that game, different guys stepped up. This particular team is just the opposite. I think this team, they know who the head of the snake is and everybody's okay with it. But from the top guy to the bottom guy on this team, they all get along. I haven't had one argument this year. I haven't had, when I watch the film and I sub guys in, everybody stands up and cheers. It's been the easiest team to coach in that aspect. Of course, I get mad about them not being disciplined on defense or boxing out or turning the ball over. So I'm going to get upset about those things, but I haven't had any player drama, doing any mediation or this kid talking about this kid or this kid jealous of this kid's playing time. This is just not the group. So I'm really happy that they reached one of their goals, winning a section title, because they've been a blessing to coach, and it's been a lot of fun just being around them because they all have great personalities.
Do you think if you knew what you know now, going back to those other teams, you would be able to cultivate a similar atmosphere that you have with this group? And if so, why? And if not, why not?
If I was to be able to go back, I think I would, I would definitely do a better job because I know more things now. I believe in certain things. Of course, like I said earlier, I still got a long ways to go, but I think things would go better. I just think it's like without struggle, there's no progress. You learn from your mistakes. I would like to think you learn from your mistakes. I think I learned from mine. I think I can learn from others' mistakes as well. So just going through the grind, it's like practice reps, a bunch of game reps. I've had so many game reps, summer league, real games, postseason, watching my cell phone film, evaluating myself, evaluating other coaches. I think that has helped me grow tremendously, and hopefully I can continue to grow.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned this earlier about finding things that you believe in and dealing with detractors early on when you had teams you felt should have won more and they didn't, and now you've won. And I would imagine that is empowering to where you can just tune out the noise now and be like, look, that's great. You have your opinion. This is what I believe in. It's proven to be successful. Like at the end of the day, you say whatever you want, but nobody can really take away what you've accomplished. And what I'm curious about is how do you advise? How do you offer guidance for people that are younger experientially, not even necessarily age-wise, but haven't reached that point where they've hung a banner and they've won. And now you can tune out the noise and tell people to kick rocks, right? Because it's not that you have irrational confidence, you have earned confidence. And you can't really take that approach because you're always going to have some sort of imposter syndrome until you've won or until you've been doing it long enough. But how would you advise like people to just look, drill down on something you believe in and go hard on it and forget what all the people in the stands are saying?
Yeah, because they're always going to talk in the stands no matter what. I've been to games of scout teams and I'm recording. You can just hear everybody in the stands knows what should be going on or should happen. And even the team I had that was one game from making it to the state championship, the next week I remember going to the store and I seen some people. And it was people that probably had seen us play three times all season. They saw probably towards the end of the season. And at the end of that game, we started to press. And we came back a little with the press and we ended up losing by three. And we were never down a lot. But if you watch that last moment and you're like, man, maybe they should have pressed all game. No, that's fool's gold. And first off, if you had watched that, if this person that made this comment, if they had watched us play all season, they would know that we weren't the fastest, most athletic team. We had skill. We could shoot the ball. We had players, but we weren't high flyers. We weren't really fast. And I only played seven guys. What do we look like pressing all game in the NorCal championship, and we hadn't pressed all season. And I remember driving that day like, man, we were one game from the state championship and people still going to make comments like that. So at the end of the day, you're always going to be criticized and critiqued. It's like the Monday morning quarterback. Mm-hmm. Everybody always got something to say. And it's just like me after the game. I can drive home. I should have did this. I should have called timeout. I should have made this up. So as a new coach, you can't let that bother you. You got to have thick skin. Even when you're coaching your team, you probably can hear a parent in the crowd, call a timeout, do this or do that. You can't let that bother you. You have to believe in what you're teaching. And at the end of the day, you're the one with the kids every day in practice. You're the one watching film. You're the one scouting the other team. So you got it. When you look in the mirror, if you can look at yourself and know that you're doing 100% and you're giving it your all, then you can sleep well at night, no matter what anybody says. Because a lot of times they're the same people that love you when you win or be the same ones that talk bad on you when you lose. So at the end of the day, we tell my assistant coach Reynolds says it all the time. Everyone in the gym, the coaches and the players, it's our circle. It's like the circle of trust. And we don't let no one in the circle. It's just us. So,
yeah. What's the cliche? Don't take criticism too seriously from people you wouldn't ask for advice. Something to that effect.
I agree. Because we've had success and I get it. Everybody loves us right now. But of course, I can remember the first game I went as the varsity coach. So of course I remember some of those painful playoff losses when we were told that we couldn't win. It took us 7 years as a coaching staff before we got one playoff win. And that first playoff win was a buzzer beater by Austin Shake. And then the next year we won another at the buzzer by David Kim. Then a year after that, we lost in our gym to Soledad, an upset, where they brought two school bus loads of students to our gym and took over the gym and celebrated. And it was a painful loss for us. And for me as a coach to drive home thinking we're never going to go anywhere. And just on another note, as a player playing for Coach Randall at Monterey High, he had always talked about, he had been to the CCS one time. And he said, Monterey High always struggles to get out the quarterfinals. We couldn't get past that Saturday. And I remember my junior year, we didn't get past the Saturday. Sophomore year, we didn't. My junior year, we didn't. My senior year, we didn't. And then when I became a coach, it was the same problem. So it was like, it was haunting me as a coach. I had days where I cried in the room by myself after playoff losses, thinking it's never going to happen. So when we first got that first win on that Saturday, we beat Reardon. For that, when we won that first section title, we won that first quarterfinal game versus Reardon. It felt like we won the championship that day, if I'm being honest with you, because it was like we got past Saturday. And then when I was driving home, I'm thinking like, we got another game. We got to win the semifinal. So it's just been a long journey. But I think every loss has made us stronger as a team and a staff.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a cool way to think about it. And I think if you go back and track your playoff appearances, people take it for granted sometimes, right? Because you'll have these runs like you're having this year. But then in most other years, it's if you get one, that's great. And then usually it's one and out and your playoff record's like 500. And then like you have a nice little run, it bumps you up. But realistically, like you have to play well. And the conditions have to go your way and you got to get lucky to win in the playoffs. And
I 1,000% agree with you. And I think about all three titles, there was a moment in each one of those runs where, man, if this don't happen, we lose.
No doubt.
And people can look at the score and even yesterday's score and be like, man, they killed them. No, because we were up 11. Then in the third quarter, they cut it to 5 and they had all the momentum in the gym. And that 5-point lead can evaporate at any moment. So just different moments. And I remember the first section title, we took the ball out and we passed it to our teammate for him to take it out. And if the refs call that correctly, it's Jefferson's ball. And we're up 3 at the time, but who knows how that game ends. Instead, we kept the ball. They fouled Kobe. He goes and shoots free throws. We go up 5 and it's, oh man.
Yep, got to get lucky. All right, let me pivot back to things you've learned watching others. And this time I asked you a question about the multi-sport athlete, but I want to know, as a guy that played multiple sports, your kids are involved in multiple things, what have you been able to absorb from disciplines that aren't basketball that you have then applied as a basketball coach, be it football, be it field hockey, be it hell, dance? I don't know what the kids did growing up, but something that you were just like, oh, and not only that, Greg, but it made like a shift in your ability to teach and coach.
Well, I mean, just, I think playing college football, just first off, helped me with my discipline. We had to get up early at times for our off-season workout, the 5 a.m. workout. And if you were late, man, it would be the worst day of your life. They're going to make an example of you. And once I saw what they did to the guys that were late, I was like, I will never be late. So it was just certain things that I think I learned from playing football, just being real disciplined and doing it the right way. When I watch other coaches do things, I see the preparation, the time they put in for that practice plan and that practice schedule, which I think is so important because there's only so much time you get in the season. And if you waste the week, you don't get that week back. You don't get that time back. Like my team this year, I mean, we've talked about this when I didn't have my kids on time. And I was like, man, I'm never going to get that time back. And you were like, you told me I could reach out to you at any time because you understand what I was going through. But so you like once you those 2-3 weeks you lose, you don't get them back. Those other teams, they got those 3 weeks. They're ahead of you now. So like you're swimming upstream for a while. And I think my team this year, I don't think we'll ever catch up with teams that started off from day one with all their guys. And it's just what it is.
No, but how has it informed what you now prioritize? So I've said often in conversations, and we've talked about this regularly in these episodes, is there's a thing in business called the Pareto principle, where 20% of what you do is going to get you 80% of the results. And the other 80% is going to get you 20%. So what's the 20% of things that you have now landed on, especially with this year's group, knowing that you don't have that time, knowing that you're in a pinch, that it's okay, this is what we do. And we're not going to be very good in these three areas, but we're going to be really good over here. And you had to make that choice as a coach. Talk a little bit about that and how you landed on what you prioritized.
Yeah, so really I had to simplify the offense tremendously, just run a few different sets, but we can't work on full court press. We can't work on all these different traps. We have one half court trap we do, and we play man to man. And we've just been focusing on those two things because we're behind. And offensively, there's so many things I had in mind of teaching this group. And I'm like, we can't do that. We can't do that. And there's days I've tried to teach things. I'm like, forget it. We're only going to run these three plays. And I was watching our championship game, and I watched my version, but I like to watch the announcer's version just to hear the commentate and what they got to say. Because I'm always trying to learn something and hear a different perspective of what somebody thinks of my team. And when I was watching that, he was talking about my team and how we were playing and the defense and how we were running our offense. And I like to hear certain things, the spacing and when guys should cut and somebody else's perspective of what we're doing. I think it's always been beneficial to me.
And I would imagine that each year there's a different part that you have to sacrifice, right? In regards to, you had 9 guys this year once your player got hurt. And so things that you wanted to do, you said, no, we can't do that. But I imagine other teams, the things that became priorities were different than the group this year.
Yeah, this year we don't practice a lot of taking charges because I'm afraid they're going to get hurt. We do a lot of, man, I'm icing kids. Me and my coaches, we're always making ice tubs for our kids. We don't have a lot of contact in practice with this group because I can't afford to lose anyone. So I try to find different ways to in the drills to give them some live scrimmage reps where I can hopefully protect them from hurting themselves or going too hard. But yeah, with this group, we definitely have cut a lot of drills out.
How do you think that will inform your future practice in years, regardless of how many athletes you have? Just if you reverse engineer, okay, we haven't been doing a lot of contact stuff. We've been doing a lot of rehab. We've been doing a lot of recovery. How does that inform the future iterations of the Toreadors, even when you're fully healthy?
I think it's important. I studied kinesiology as an undergrad, so I know the recovery part and the treating your body is definitely important. And I think we just got to put more emphasis on it in the future, because it is important, especially when I got a guy like Matthew Gallagher, who probably plays 29 of the 32 minutes, if not all 32. I can't run him in the mud in practice and have him banging his body if he's going to be 100, close to 100% on game day. But I got undersized guards guarding the other team's big, wrestling around. They're going to be hurting. I'm asking my 5'8 guy to take a charge, and he's taking I have a kid who's taking over 20 charges this year, and he's not a big guy at all. So I need to protect him. I need to make sure he's healthy in practice. And I get kids, they'll say, "Hey, coach, my ankle's sore. I'm going to sit over here." I say, "Okay, that's fine. Your ankle's sore. We're going to put you in this ice tub." We treat kids during practice instead of let them sit in the bleachers and say, "My hand hurts." I say, "Okay, if your hand is hurting, let us help you with that."
But even that's different than I would imagine how you approached it 5, 10, 15 years ago, where it was like, "Nah, strap up. Like, we're going."
Yes. Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I'm sure I've said that before. You can't toughen that out. You can't play through that. And on that note, what you just said, it's a tough one for me. I told you, I still can live every loss, but we went to the CS 3 times in a row. We lost that second championship, and we were up 10 going in the fourth quarter against Reardon. And of course, West Catholic Private School, we had just beat Cathedral the game before. So that's playing back-to-back West Catholic teams, which is tough on a public school like Monterey High, just being honest. And Muhammad, I remember he looked at me at the end of the third quarter. He was so gassed. They had a really good defender just hounding him all game. But Muhammad was playing phenomenal. He probably had over 20 points at the end of the third. And he looked at me and said, "Coach, I'm exhausted." And I looked at him and said, "This is the you-know-what championship. 8 minutes to go. We're going to finish this." And I should have gave that young man a break. He probably should have finished the fourth quarter on the bench with a little break going, finished the third quarter on the bench going into the fourth quarter, or at least started the fourth quarter on the bench. Then maybe I call timeout, sub him in. Of course, this is my Monday morning quarterback I'm going through. But yesterday, I looked at Matthew Gallagher. I looked at a couple of those other guys, and I said, "They're tired. I need to get them a break. I know we're up 12-13, and I subbed them out. And when I was watching the game, listening to the announcers, he said, "Coach Daniels with the mass sub at the end of third." And that helped my guys going into the fourth quarter to be fresh. So just learning over the years on the conditioning and knowing your kids, looking at their body, and can tell he's getting tired and he's going to have nothing for us in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, no, that's a total different mindset than we grew up with, and that we probably did our first majority of our coaching career. So I think that's great messaging. If you could take guys out in the section title game, rest them and have them ready for the home stretch, people can do the same thing. All right, one last question here, and this one is challenging and thought-provoking, but you may not have an immediate answer. So I'm going to ask you, give you a few examples, and then let you go where you want with it. So what I usually ask is, what is something that you have most recently changed your mind on? And what I mean by that is, hey, I used to believe this and I was dug in. Now I'm over here and here's why. So you made a logical shift in approach, and it can be about basketball. It can be about parenting. It can be about your day-to-day role on the campus. But just in general, as you go through life and you think about growth mindset and how you're constantly trying to evolve and learn, what's an example of something that you've recently changed your mind on and the reason why?
I get it that you don't always have to have a big man, but I've always wanted to have some bigger guys in my program or whatever, whatnot. But this group has made me realize that, and of course I've seen it with other teams, but of course just to be with the group and see them go through the games, that you don't have to have size to win it all. Like we're really small. We beat Oakwood, they're huge. Burlingame was way bigger than us. We played teams so much bigger than us. And that you don't have to force big guys on the court. I see some coaches, they force the big guys on the court when they could put 5 skilled guys on the court. So what I've learned from this year is I'd rather go, not all the time, depending on how your big is, but I'm okay with putting 5 skilled guys on the and playing to their strengths and not trying to force them in this box of how to play and making sure you have a big guy on out on the court, but he's big, but he can't catch the ball. He can't finish. He can't help on defense. He's just big.
Or he's just not as good as a guy that you have behind him that happens to play a different position, air quotes.
Yes, yes. He's a guard, but he's quicker. When he gets the ball, he pushes the break. He can finish. He can pass. He can shoot. Let's go that route, and let's make the other team try to match up with us instead of us trying to match up with them.
No, that's a great example. And I think that as we grow as humans, always trying to evaluate your positions on things in life is the way that we were meant to be versus, nah, in 1977, this is how we did it. And therefore, we got to do it that way.
Yeah. And my undergrad helped me learn that too, because at first I was going to be a personal trainer, and we would learn different, we're learning about the body, and we learned about different training regimens. And they would talk about, you can't have a football workout for a tennis guy or a basketball workout for this track guy. So it's like sports specific. So it was getting out of that mindset of this work when I was back in the day, we could do something different now. So just we evolve, like the game has evolved in a way as well. As you see teams play four out, five out. Before, you had to have a couple big guys and you were throwing it in the post all the time. Mm-hmm. So,
yep, you know. No doubt, coach. Appreciate you coming on and good luck this week. I know everybody around here will be pulling for you and trying to ride along with you, and enjoy the ride, man. Actually, you don't, since you've had three of these in 7 years, but these things don't come along very often for the rest of us.
I know, but believe me, I know. I've had more pain than I've had happiness. So I know.
Try to enjoy this one, and regardless of where it goes, I'm sure you do this every day. Remind the boys, be where your feet are, and enjoy the ride, because these things don't come back.
Yeah, they don't, and definitely got to enjoy it.
This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks, and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With 8 delicious flavors, you're guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another electrolyte product. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.